One of the things that I do is I bless my food. It's interesting, something which in childhood for many of us was just a kind of a time of impatience when adults were controlling the situation, can become a moment to reawaken a living truth again. So when I get food and so often I hold the food up or just sit with my hands at the food, and there are many ways to bless food. And if you have a familiar way, you of course work with that. But the way I use this one, which is a Sanskrit prayer, is I say the Sanskrit, and then I just think about it for a moment, and I realize that this whole ritual of praying over food is part of all of it. It's part of the One, it's part of God, it's part of all form, it's part of law, it's just part of the universe. And that the food I'm praying over, the oatmeal or whatever, is part of God. And that me, who is making this prayer, who is offering the food, is part of God. And that the hunger that I'm using the oatmeal to quiet, the pangs in my stomach, the hunger, the desires, the fire into which this food will be burned or consumed, that's also part of God. So that I see that I am offering something to God through pouring it into the fire of my hunger, all of which is God. So it is God offering to God, God, through the transformation that also is God. And I begin to sense the oneness of everything, and that in that one, nothing is really happening. All the changes are only when I am looking at it from the place of the many, not from the place of the one. And as I get into that oneness, I start to experience the quietness. And then I understand that all karma, all the forms, the unfolding forms, are one. And that the deeper I appreciate that it is all one, do I become one with it all. And is all that separateness over? So I use just this prayer to keep reminding me and bringing me home all the time. And I've gotten so now that I really can't sit down to a meal without doing this. And I just sometimes in a restaurant, I just quietly just go in. I don't have to make a production out of it. I don't have to stop other people from eating. So we are offering this to you as something that you can use or not as you choose. I'll say it once and then maybe we'll just say it together until you have a feeling for it. Brahmapanam Brahmavir Brahmagni Brahmanahota Brahma itan ganta byam Brahma karma samadina. Together. Brahma panam Brahma havir Brahma agni Brahmana hota Brahmaitan gantabhyam Brahma karma samadina. So now we are adding When you sing in line, you're singing to God, so you're not just standing in line for food, being impatient or hungry or watching to see if there'll be enough food. Now you're just singing to God, and you happen to be standing in line. And then you sit down and you remember that all is one because the food reminds you. And then you go on eating. And slowly you just watch. Rituals can become rigid things or they can become loose things. Mechanics, yes. No, the dangerous expeditions probably will start tomorrow. This is a... Well, it's a set of nonverbal sensory experiences known only to Chaitanya at this moment, which he will make clear in the afternoon. Those opportunities to go to Joshua Tree will happen pretty nearly every day, as long as the weather allows it. Yes. No, it's carpools.
A question back there.
Yes. Will the Tai Chi be repeated? The Tai Chi is going to be every day. Yeah, so that those that would like to do it could do it every day and develop a little proficiency or start in the next day. Okay. Just going to be starting to keep putting these units of meditation in now more and more each day, or at least so many times each day, just to give us space to work with the feelings that are coming up and the ideas that are coming up. So if you'll come to a sitting position.
It's the only one I like. I like it because someone likes it so much.
Okay, it's time once again, folks, for a... I didn't even say what it was time for, and your hand is up. It's time to meditate. So there. See? Come to a sitting position. It's time for the answer, man. Yes. Yeah.
I would like to know if reincarnation is valid. It seems to me that I'm going to die because the guy who was here last time, or the time before, ain't here now. He or she died, so I'm going to die. And I wonder, I've heard of people that leave their bodies and they meet beings who were here. And if all these beings have died, I wonder who they're meeting. How could, for example, how could somebody meet a mother when, how come if they didn't meet who the mother was the previous time around?
You think I can't answer that, don't you? I can't understand it, but I can answer it. Did you ever read Autobiography of a Yogi, Yogananda's book?
Yeah.
Do you remember when he met Yukteswar, after Yukteswar had left his body in the Bombay hotel room? And he said, Guruji, what's it like out there, or over there, or up there, or something? And then there's a long description of the different lokas, different planes. And at one point, Yogananda says to Yogananda, I'm sort of in charge of the fourth plane, or I work there, I didn't remember what it was. And he said, when somebody's graduating from that plane, he said, God, or the One, they have a big party. It's like a party, a gathering. And you could call it initiation, but you could call it a party. And he says, God comes in the form that person most wanted, most revered. Like if it was Christ, it comes as Christ. If it was Moses, it comes as Moses, okay? Or Muhammad. And the predicament of applying three sets of limiting conditions that exist for us on this plane that you and I are meeting. One is the rational mind about what is here cannot be there, for example. Like logic, A cannot be B. And the other two are the limits of time and space. And it would be more true to say that everything that ever was or will be is. And that what you meet, what you want is what you get. It's like out of the Akash, out of the infinite set of possibilities, what you pull is what you pull. Let me give you an example. I get maybe three or four, maybe three or four letters a month, I guess, telling me about somebody who says, during the night on last Tuesday, the 19th of February, you came to me during the night when I was about to commit suicide, and you were very calming to me, and you came right into my room, and I just want to thank you. Right? So I look at my calendar, and I find out that that night I went to the movies, and I came back, and I had a beer, and I went to sleep, and I slept soundly. Now, what should I conclude from that? Should I conclude that that person is off the wall, or that what their heart called, they got, and that these other planes of my being are also doing their thing, just like your dream worlds are going on, but it isn't crossing over into normal waking consciousness, right? And that I assume my subtle body's doing a lot of stuff that I'm not busy doing or thinking I'm doing. Now, so I'm trying to suggest, first of all, the game isn't quite as simple, linear, as you would try to analyze it. In works like the work that Elizabeth Ross prefaces Moody's work, Life After Life, which we'll be talking about later in the week, when a person, as they leave their body, meet old aunts and uncles and so on. It's really threads what they're meeting. I guess the only way I could experience it, to share it, what I feel, is that they are meeting shreds of attachment or karma that is projected outward. Okay? And that's, in fact, who we are meeting when you and I meet each other. It's just that we can't quite handle understanding it that way because it's so solid and so real for us. But that the aunt or uncle, it doesn't mean that they've been sitting out there for 20 or 30 years waiting for you to come and that they can't get on with their work till they finish meeting you. They may well be hanging around there, or they may have actually gone, that being may have gone on, but the thought forms that created that particular existence are still hanging around. Because any thought form that ever was is always is. That's the issue about karma. Karma is really attached to thought forms. So that a person, it's like you could shed an old piece of cloth. The cloth is still around, even though you've gone on. And what the person calls is the cloth, really, and they meet their uncle or aunt as they knew them. And if they really were ready to meet what was in the cloth, they would meet God. Because all of us are just God in drag, really. So now ask your question again, within all that confusion.
That all makes it seem very unreal. That is to say...
Well, let me say to you, first of all, it is. It is unreal. But it's no, now it comes to clincher, see. It's no more unreal than this one is. I mean, have you ever had a dream in the night where you wake up from the dream and you say, wow, that was a dream. I think I'll get up. And you go to get up and then you realize you're still dreaming. Did you ever have a dream within a dream, ever? No, it's not familiar to you? Have any of you? Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You've never had one. Well, when you see that one, then you understand this. And when you wake up out of this one, I mean, you've had dreams, and you know that when you wake up, you say, boy, wasn't that real? I mean, I was really running from that train or, you know, kissing that woman or whatever. And, well, that's what this is. If you can imagine that this is the same thing, it's a set of thought forms. It's just so real, and we're so attached to our senses and our thinking mind that we can't hardly conceive of that. We can just intellectually speculate about it.
I was nobody's fool.
He was nobody's fool, and he had a Cadillac with nobody in the back seat, and he said, nobody can solve your economic problems, and a number of wise statements. And it's actually true that, I mean, a fellow once wrote to me, and he said he was an old editor of the New York Times, retired editor. And he wrote and he said he was starting a magazine called the Obituary Quarterly, in which people could write their obituaries in advance of their death so they could have them the way they'd like them. Because, you know, a lot of people read the obituaries every day, sort of, because that's sort of very real. And so would I write my obituary? And I thought it was a little cute, and I didn't really want to do that. But after a while, I thought, all right, I'll do it. And I wrote the obituary, and I said, born, educated, father, mother, etc., colleges, books, published, you know, the whole routine you write. And then I wrote, about halfway through his life, he had realized he had been going in the wrong direction. He had been busy becoming somebody. And the game, in fact, was to become nobody. Nobody special. And the fact that this obituary is being published is proof that he failed. Because finally you just disappear into, you're just part of it. You're just part of the process of life. You begin to hear what it means to be part of the Tao or the flow. And there's just nothing special. Even when you're playing a special role like I am at this moment. It's a question of where I think I am, who I think I am. If I think I am this, great suffering. Because this will die. You know? Ram Dass will linger very shortly in the memories. You know? Remember that poem called Ozymandias? Ozymandias, somebody's walking out in the desert and it's just barren desert, and then they find a stone. It's just sticking up out of the ground a little bit, and there's some writing on it. And just one stone, and they clear it away, and written on it is, I am Ozymandias, king of kings. Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair. What a beautiful questions.
You said a moment ago that thought forms I'm interested in, I'd like to know your opinion on where thought comes from. I mean, we seem to think that we originate thoughts, but in actuality, where do they come from?
The stork. It's hard for me to know what you mean by a thought. I mean, it's a pattern of energy. It's a pattern that's the result of previous patterns. It's just forms turning into other forms, turning into other forms, turning into other forms.
Well, I mean, they don't originate. Do they originate in what we call mind? Or is it from past karma? Or, I mean, you know, what?
Thoughts are past karma, yes. That's what they are. That's what they are. That's what they are. The solid thing of is past karma. And in such, they don't originate. They are merely formed out of, you could say they're formed out of the stuff of the universe It's as if you take putty and you keep molding it into the forms of your universe, of your mind, which is your universe, and you keep molding it depending on everything in you up until that moment. It just keeps molding. It's like a DNA code, if you will. It just keeps molding it and molding it. And that molding affects the subsequent moldings and so on. And it's all like silly putty. The whole universe is like that.
And then we eventually come to the point where when thoughts of many souls or many entities merge, what are we approaching there? Is that the universe or the ultimate? No, here, sort of. We're on a path where we're all going to merge or meet, or we already are connected. We're just going to realize that.
Yeah, but
well, as those thoughts come closer and closer to that, or
no, you come closer. You let go of the clinging to those thoughts. Thoughts are like a plane of reality. They're just a plane. They're just solid at one level.